We're doing Pirkei Avot. We're up to the third chapter, the 13th Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva Omer. Rabbi Akiva says, Sechok. How would we translate Sechok? I want to say playfulness, lightheadedness. Vekalut Rosh, and lightheadedness. Margilin Le'ervam. They are what make a person accustomed to illicit relationships. Explains Rabbeinu Yonah, Ratzah lomar she'aschok v'divrei sicha b'teila im kalut rosh marginin le'erva. Meaning, if people joke around, if people have pointless conversation mixed with lightheadedness, so that's what brings them to illicit relationships. We'll finish the Rabbeinu Yonah and then we'll elaborate. Aval kovad rosh v'yira emsiag l'erva. So, by inference, we understand that being serious and being God-fearing, yira is the opposite of schok. That's what's special, that Yitzchak is the midah of yira'ah. Aval kovad rosh v'yira emsiag l'arayot. Those are the fence. They help protect a person from illicit relationships. Shekol zot ha-mishnah b'segim imdaberot. Because in fact, we will see that the Mishnah is focused on how we protect ourselves. So the rest of the Mishnah will speak about what fences a person can create to protect himself. So then the first sentence is also a fence. Even though the first sentence seems to say what leads in the wrong direction, it's an inference of how you can remain on the right direction. By saying that lightheadedness and joking around can lead to illicit relationships, Chazal were indicating that if you want to stay away from that, the way to do that is by being serious and by having your being a God-fearing person.
It would seem what you're saying that if you're like basically don't take anything very seriously, this and that, you're not valuing this life. You don't really believe there's any real purpose to it. So then why not do whatever? It seems that that's the way they're going. I mean, because there is this idea that you are supposed to have a sense of humor in a healthy way for a short bit. You shouldn't always be somber. But life. Time is extremely precious, and if you frivol it away, it sounds like you're really saying you haven't got it into your being that it really matters, and if it doesn't really matter, you'll go after whatever desire.
So I think what you're saying is that the Mishnah is talking about an attitude in life. I'm not sure. I think it's very possible that what you're saying is on the mark. I would just mention what we do find in Chazal. Chazal say that with one's own life, so then intimacy involves schok and kalut rosh. You find in the Torah, when Yitzchak is going to be intimate with his wife, it says, Avimelech, who peers through the window, sees Yitzchak mitzacheik et Rivka ishto. What does it mean, mitzacheik? It means they were joking around. It means that as a prelude to intimacy, there is going to be that frivolity, that lightheadedness. I didn't say no. So I'm saying we can understand the Mishnah the way you're interpreting it as a general attitude, as a behavior. The rest of the Mishnah will at least seem to be in specific times, and that's why I wasn't sure if the Mishnah means a general attitude or the Mishnah means in the presence of women.
Okay.
I wasn't sure which way to interpret it.
I didn't catch up until maybe I missed it. I didn't realize there were
Let's see the rest of the Mishnah.
The presence of women, as far as I know, as I said, you should basically avoid other than your wife or family. Anyway.
Okay, but there are sometimes family events, sometimes you're at a kiddush, so...
Teach you that. Gotcha. Yeah, look.
I'm saying, so that's where it's... I'm saying, for sure the Mishnah means in those scenarios, is the Mishnah also instructing us that if you're commonly lightheaded and frivolous, then that could lead to erva? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if the...
I think I was off. I know.
I hear your pshat. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure which way to interpret the Mishnah. No, because the Talmud in Tractate Sota also says that when they'd interview the Sota, so they would tell her, "Harbes chok ose." A lot of things can happen if you're joking around. If you're joking around, it sounds like they're telling her, "We understand that if you were joking around with the neighbor, one thing led to another, and you got to the wrong place. At least confess and save us this whole procession." Does that mean that they were talking about the general trait of being lightheaded, joking around, or were they talking about joking around with the neighbor? I don't know. We see that prior to receiving the Torah, the Jewish people were told to separate from their wives. This was a way of being serious, the assumption being that when a person is with his wife, he's going to not only let down his guard, he's going to be lightheaded. There's going to be that joking frivolity that belongs there. That's a positive, that's a part of building the relationship between them. The question is that the exception, or is the warning... Don't do that with your neighbor. Don't be joking, because this is where it would lead to. I'm not sure.
I like what you said in the sense that, you know, if you're in a situation, a kid that maybe shouldn't even be there, you have a big kid, this and that, certainly you shouldn't then be like joking around.
Right.
It leads to.
That's for sure. Yeah. That's for sure.
But that depends how you read the Ten Commandments.
I'm listening.
No, if it says, I asked Stefan, what does it mean to want your neighbor's wife? When does it stop? And he said, when you're thinking about it.
Right?
So
that's
if
true.
You're talking and doing this, and you...
No, even if you're not thinking that. No, the mission is warning you, a practical warning.
That can lead to you transgress that command also.
That's true, but the Mishnah is giving you a practical warning. Sometimes a person's joking around and they don't have improper thoughts. They're just joking around, but you shouldn't be joking around with people of the opposite gender. That's even though the person will say, I had no evil intentions, I didn't mean anything bad. Okay, if you guys took us this far, so then we have to also we have to address this a little bit broader. The Gemara discusses the following, gives the following example. The Gemara discusses the prohibition of yichud, and the Gemara is discussing modesty. So the Gemara gives the following parable. There's someone who's drinking a cup of wine, and a fly flies into his cup of wine. So you have one person who says, yach, tosses the whole cup of wine. You have someone else who takes out the fly and sucks off the juice. He doesn't want to lose out that little bit of juice, and then tosses the fly. And then you have someone else who takes out the fly and drinks the rest of the wine. Talmud says the same is true with one and his own wife. You have a person who, if his wife talks to the neighbor, he goes off the handle. Crazy. The Talmud says that was Pappus ben Yehuda. Pappus ben Yehuda. Used to lock the door and the windows when he left the house, so his wife shouldn't schmooze with anyone. She shouldn't dare talk to the neighbor. So Pappus, the great Pappus who Rabbi Akiva argued with, who told Rabbi Akiva, why are you teaching Torah publicly? The great Pappus, so he went too far. He used to lock the door. He'd leave the house, lock the door. And what ended up happening? His wife was Miriam, you've heard of her, and she went around with other men in the end, and she had an interesting son you guys all heard about. So that's Pappus. The Gemara says he went too far. The Talmud didn't agree with him. Then you have, the Gemara says, you have someone who sees his wife, she walks outside sleeveless, she goes into the marketplace and she's joking around with the guys, and when she's doing whatever she's doing, when she's done at night, she comes home to him, and he's like, go have a good time. The Gemara says, that's a guy who takes the fly out, sucks off the wine, and then tosses the fly. There are things which a person should say. I'm sorry, part of being faithful to one another is a certain level of modesty that we have with people of the opposite gender. And a person shouldn't do that. Then the Gemara says there's a normal person. He knows his wife is sometimes going to go over to the neighbor and ask for some flour, some sugar, and the husband's going to answer the door, and she'll say good morning, and they're going to have a certain basic conversation, and he doesn't go off the handle. Hey, why are you doing talking to the neighbor? You know, there's a balance. So the Gemara gives that there are three levels. But obviously that's so long as things are proper. But our Mishnah is warning us that being lightheaded, joking around, that leads to the wrong places. Ma'asrot siag la'osher. If you tithe, so that's a fence for wealth. Explains Rabbeinu Yonah, Kedamrinim b'masechet Tanit, the Gemara says in Tractate Tanis, Al oto tinok shaya kura aser ta'aser, Reish Lakish had a son, and Reish Lakish, his boy, who was Rav Yochanan's nephew, because Reish Lakish married Rav Yochanan's sister, and he was reading the verse Aser Te'aser, and Rabbi Yochanan, his uncle, said to him, Aser b'shvil shetit asher. He said, tithe so you will become wealthy. V'amar lo v'chimutan l'nasot. So the kid asks Rabbi Yochanan, his uncle, the chief rabbi, he says, are we allowed to test Hashem? V'aktiv lo tenasu et Hashem. The verses don't test Hashem. Amar le'acham Rabbi Yoshaya, chutz mizor. Rabbi Yoshaya taught, this is the exception. Shneimar, as the verse in Malachi at the end of Prophets says, Haviu et kol ha'maaser el beta otzar, bring your tithe to the treasury. V'yiterev beveitu v'chanun inam v'zot. Hashem says, you give me what I'm supposed to have and test me. You'll see, I'll give you so much. That's why the Mishnah says tithing is a fence, it's a protection for wealth. You want to get wealthy? Give your tithe with a good eye. A person shouldn't say, I made 1,000, how am I going to give 100? It's so expensive to give a tithe. No, give it. Hashem itbarach v'yitala. Hashem is faithful, he'll pay a person and he'll double his wages. And this is true with experience as well. Now, this is quoted in the Talmud and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, and the commentaries discuss, is this only relevant when we have the tithe that's biblical, the tithe of the crops, or is this also relevant today when people take their tithe? So I once had a person come and give nice amounts to tzedakah. And at one point, I said to the family, I said, you know, you guys are struggling. There have been so many times that you yourself needed help. Perhaps you shouldn't be giving so much to charity. Maybe this isn't right for you. So they said, no, when we give to charity, we see blessing. I said, I don't know. You've come here and you've needed loans, so I'm not sure. And their answer, as mind-boggling as it sounds, their answer was, every time we came that we needed loans, it was when we weren't tithing. They said, when we gave our tithe, we never came to you for loans. When we thought we're going to be tithed, so we stopped tithing, that's when we reached that point. Okay, there's a saying that they say in yeshivas, and that is that he who wants to believe will see what he wants to believe. But I don't know what to tell a person who says that. You know, the Talmud does say this, and there is such an opinion. You know, so he asked me, okay, Rabbi, what am I supposed to do now? Should I or shouldn't I? I picked up my hands. What am I supposed to say? You're telling me when you give, you have. So I'm. That's what the Gemara says. You know, in Shulchan Aruch, we have a discussion whether that's supposed to be effective today or not. But But if you're saying to you it's obvious it is, how could I argue with that? What am I supposed to say? Yes.
When I was doing that question, sometimes you know your income was 5,000 shekel, but it cost you 4,900 and like you know, if you give a tenth of your paycheck, or is it a tenth of your profit of that month?
Every person should consult with their local Orthodox rabbi. Like Daniel mentioned earlier, there are different opinions on this, how you calculate the tithe. It sort of depends. You know, a guy called me up once and said he has a startup company, and this year he made $2 million. Does he factor in his tithe pre-expenses or post-expenses? So I said, well, if you made $2 million this year, do you have a house yet? He said, no. I said, do you anticipate you'll have more income in future years? This is like a once-in-a-lifetime boom, and you're going to have to live off of $2 million. He said, no. There's every reason to expect that the company will continue generating profit. I said, okay. So the first thing you should do is take the tithe from the brutto, not the netto, pre-expenses. Because a wealthy person really has to give 20%. Yeah, you have to give more. I don't consider you wealthy yet. $2 million sounds like a lot of money, but if you don't have a house and you don't have other basic things, so then first get settled in all of that. You see next year, save a record of what you made. You see next year that you're still making good money. You know, if this is your first year, I don't know what'll be next year. You see next year you're making good money, then retroactively you'll take 20% off of this year. Right now, at least take 10% of the brutto instead of the netto. But you see that he had the question. That means people will very often look at themselves and say, I'm not sure I have enough. Until this year, he wasn't making $2 million, right? Now he made $2 million. And then that still doesn't... that's why it's important to ask Shaila. I'm saying that the fact that there are two opinions doesn't always allow us to be lenient. It depends on where a person is holding. For guys here in the Machon, very often I'll say, don't give a tithe altogether. Keep a record of what you've made. But right now, if you're not making ends meet, you don't cover your basic necessities, you have months where you're in the red, so put the money aside, put it in a separate bank account, and see how you're doing. You give a little bit of charity every year, and you take that tithe and put it in a separate account. You'll see, Be'ezrat Hashem, in a year's time, in 2 years' time, you'll see you're well off, and you're covering your expenses fine. But if a person doesn't have money aside in case he'll need a dental treatment, in case his shoes go bad and he needs to buy new shoes, and suddenly he's in a bind, how does he buy new shoes? His cell phone breaks. So today, a cell phone is a basic necessity. I think that's ridiculous, but if when you sign up a kid to school, they're not willing to accept your form without a cell phone number, because who knows what'll happen to the kid, they have to be able to reach you. I asked the school, I said, you know, until... like 5 years ago, not everyone had cell phones. What does that mean? I can't sign up my kid unless I have a cell phone number in there. And they're looking at me like I'm crazy. They're saying, and what if something happens to the kid in school? And I said, what happened until 5 years ago? People managed. You know, there was a world until we had cell phones. No, you got to give us a cell phone number. Okay, so I'm saying, so today it's a necessity. An employer won't take you if he can't reach you on a cell phone. So being that there are basic necessities like dental treatment, medical insurance, replacing shoes, where a person might not be able to cover it. If a person is like you said, he basically his paycheck covers his expenses every month. Taking that tithe, and where will you cover those expenses from? So that's why, aside from the importance of having a savings plan, what I recommend when people are at your stage of the game and they're not yet making large amounts of money, take that tithe, put it in a separate bank account, and do not say I'm doing this for tzedakah. You say, I'm putting it aside, and I'm going to pay attention to how I'm managing financially. If I end the year, and I see I keep putting money into there, so let's say by the end of the year I have 5,000 shekel in that account, so then I'll take out 500 shekel of that account and give it to charity, and I'll see next year how I'm doing, because 5,000 shekel isn't that much money. 5,000 shekel, I'm saying, if a guy loses a job, 5,000 shekel isn't going to carry him a month. Maybe at your stage of the game it will. It'll carry him 1 month, and what happens the second month? I'm saying just paying rent, paying the basic expenses, rent, arnona. So a person has to build up. But then again, you have a person who says, what do you mean? I have parents, they take care of me. If things go bad, I go to their house. That's why it's important to sit with a rabbi who will understand your scenario and think with him financially what the right move is. But most of the time, if a person is not comfortable, my recommendation is take that tithe, if you can afford it, put it in a separate account and pay attention, see how you're doing. There is a machlokas whether we calculate the tithe pre-basic expenses or post-basic expenses.
I like the company's expenses. Like
your expenses, rent, food, electric, water, paying your children's education, paying your children's transportation, your transportation, your cell phone bills, basic expenses.
As you said, it's so individual. Because somebody grew up a certain way, can't for a kid could be, you know, his gray ears, wife, new clothes for Pesach, could be, if they're used to it. But other people, who, you know, live with a peg, they don't have clothes. It's a whole different bucket. And you gave a beautiful example of a family that basically would take tzedakah if need be, rather than stop giving that amount, because they believe that this is, brings them blessings. So you said it. You got to ask your individual, there's no other way.
Recommend it, yeah. Yes.
So, tithe maaseh tzedakin is the rabbanan? Is it mina? What's the halachic status of it?
In the laws of tzedakah, three opinions are quoted as to the halachic status of maaseh tzedakin. Whether it is biblical, the responsibility to tithe your money is biblical, an extension of the responsibility to tithe your crops, or it is rabbinic, or it is a good custom. In the response of Rav Yecheskel Landau, the Noda B'Yehuda writes that we basically go with the opinion that it is a good custom. But it is a correct custom, and people who do partition a tithe end up giving charity. And those who say, I'll see what I can do, usually give much less. So it's important to adhere to that. The alimna leva adam, sorry, I skipped a line. V'inyan atzdaka ukuma masrot uvarbot bitzdaka yusifo shera loshro. Giving charity is just like tithing, and when a person gives more charity, he will become more wealthy. V'alimna leva adam liten matnot dolot levyonim penimat oshro velo espik. A person shouldn't withhold himself from giving big gifts to the poor and tell himself, I'm going to lose my wealth, I won't have enough. A person should know that the reason why God gives him wealth, the logic behind it is so that he can help the poor. A person who is very wealthy shouldn't think when he gives a lot of charity, sometimes a person doesn't give enough, and then he thinks to himself and says, I've given so much. I've saved so many lives. That's true, but he was responsible to give more. He doesn't realize that if you have someone poor, but he's giving as much as he should, and then you have someone who's wealthy, and he's giving a lot, but he's not giving enough. Ki harash ve'en lo al asav noten ma'asro karaui v'ashir yishlo alpaim sav natan lema'aser matayim chaser achat. Because you have a poor person who has a small volume of flour, and he gives a tithe of that small volume. And then you have a wealthy person who has 1,000 times that, and he doesn't give exactly the tithe. He gives a little less than the 20% he should give. So the poor person, he did his dues. And the wealthy person, well, he's going to be found faulty. A person can't gauge himself and say, I gave a lot. The question is, did you give in accordance with what you were supposed to give? The Talmud gives us stories about this. I think it was Rav Yosef who had a dream that his nephews were going to lose a lot of money to the government. He came to his nephews and said, could you guys check if you gave enough tzedakah? And the nephews were like, yeah, we'll get to it. And then Erev Rosh Hashanah came, and suddenly the government's men came in and they took from them a ton of wealth. So he came to them and said, "Didn't I ask you to go over your accounting, your books?" They said, "Uncle, how'd you know?" He said, "I had a dream, and they told me that they're coming from the government to take your money. So I figured, why would you guys lose money? Must be you didn't give enough charity. So wouldn't you have been better off had you given it to charity? You had to lose it all to taxes." But in those days, the government didn't give a steady tax. They'd sometimes pounce on a person and take a lot of money from them. So that's what the Talmud tells us. Sometimes people think, I've given a lot. Yeah, you've given a lot, but have you given as much as you should have? That's the same is true with charity. A person who has more is responsible for giving more. It's not just a question of how much one has given. It's a question of, has one fulfilled their responsibility? So this is the idea, Rabbi Akiva taught us, of ma'asrot siyag la'osher. Tithing is a protection of one's wealth, and Rabbeinu Yonah expanded it to also giving giving charity. That giving charity is also a fence, it protects one's wealth. Maybe we'll do one more sentence in this Mishnah. Masoret siyag la'Torah. Masoret, tradition, is a fence for Torah. Masoret elu male v'chaser v'atamim. What do we mean when we say tradition? That's a tradition of how you spell each word in Torah. That's a tradition of how you, the cantillation notes, how you sing each pasuk in Torah. Shemasu chachamim natalmidehem. It was given on in tradition. V'em siag la'Torah shebichtav. They are a way of protecting the written Torah. You hardly find differences in all the Sifrei Torah, and all the Tanakhs. We have the same Tanakh, the same cantillation notes. There's almost no difference. When you look at Talmud, you do find differences. We have differences where we're not sure. Every page of Talmud has discussion of a few words on that page. Whether it's this word or that word, in many places you have different versions in the Talmud. When we look at Talmud, so very often people, Rabbeinu Yonah writes, in his day, people who would copy over the Talmud sometimes thought, hey, this should be a word different, and they changed words in Talmud. Rabbeinu Yonah says, in his day, the Talmud was all copied by hand. And sometimes someone who was copying it over thought, this must be a mistake, must be this word instead of that word. And he says, you see in Talmud that we have versions going all over. People change things. People say there must have been a mistake in the book, and they change it. Rabbeinu Yonah says, when they copy over the Talmud, people feel free with it. He says, in the Torah you don't find that. In the Torah, down to the letter, we have everything exact. No one says, hey, maybe this word should be this way and that word should be that way. Everything's exact. Why? He says, that's because we kept that tradition. We kept the tradition of exactly which words are spelled differently. You know, in the Torah it says na'ara. Na'ara is always spelled without a hey in the end. It's spelled like na'ar. Yerushalayim in Tanakh is always spelled without a yud. Yerushalayim. Yaakov is always spelled without a vav. Five exceptions where Yaakov is spelt with a vav. Five exceptions where Yerushalayim is spelt with a yud. Eliyahu, spelt without a... Yeah, you have five exceptions. So the tradition is the fence that protects the Torah. The tradition of the tunes, the tradition of where the spelling changes, that's what helps ensure that in the Torah no one changes anything. He says, in contrast, in the Talmud, we have a very hard time. He says, it's very hard to find an exact form of Talmud because every person who copies it over figures, this was a mistake and changes this, and that was a mistake and changes that. And he says, we got a big problem with that. That's a big problem. So what did we learn today? We learned about lightheadedness that leads to illicit relationships, joking around, frivolity. So Rabbeinu Yonah says, the Mishnah says, even if that's not your intention, that's not the way you should be behaving with people of the opposite gender. Number two, tithing or giving charity is a fence that protects one's wealth. And number three, tradition is the fence that maintains the Torah. And that's why till today we have the Torah exactly the same way. It doesn't matter if you're Yemenite, Sephardi, Ashkenazi. There are very, very, very little differences in the way we write the Torah. We all have the same thing.